That is a short gospel, really, coming out of Mark there. However, it's a gospel which I have run a retreat on for a diocese some time back now, for a whole diocese, for the clergy of that diocese. And there is so much in that very short text that applies not just to clergy, but to everyday people, that it's a text that could be used over and over again to remind us of what is truly important in our spiritual journey. The first thing that I would draw your attention to again, because you would be aware of this, is that Jesus had a plan. And that plan was disrupted. His plan was primarily at this time to take the apostles away so that they could rest. He was aware that they were tired and obviously hungry, that gets mentioned, but they needed to recharge. And so he was aware of that. And so he physically popped them in a boat and took them away. The people understood where he was headed and, of course, got there first. So Jesus' plan was turned upside down. Now, part of my task is always to try to relate what's happening in the gospel in our lives, your life and my life and perhaps the life of the local church and wider church. We too, each and every one of us, have a plan. The plan starts usually from the night before, and we say to ourselves, tomorrow I'm going to do this, or I've got to do this, or I've got to achieve this, or I want to achieve this. And then off we set in the morning, and then it's not too long before something goes belly up. Someone, particularly if you're a priest, someone comes along and disrupts your plan for the day. So most of the things that I write in my diary in terms of appointments that I need to be at or whatever, I actually write in pencil. Because I, like Jesus, that sounds terrible, but I, like Jesus, I do have a plan, but I have to be prepared to forego my plan for what I consider to be the greater need. And that need always comes from the person or the people that I'm dealing with. So this gospel is really close to my heart, and it's quite interesting how every now and then as I've prepared my sermon and then I pray through it again and then I pray through it again, Jesus will send somebody along to disrupt my sermon plan. And that happened again to me today when I have confessions, as most of you will know, in the church from 11 till 12 o'clock at least on a Saturday. And then so by the time I come down here and unlock the church and I have a washing routine, my Saturday washing routine is pretty rigid. No one interferes with that. That's all done and dusted by about 9 o'clock, and then I like to get out into the garden if it's not frozen. So today I'm out there doing what I want to do in the gardens, and this fellow comes along, an older fellow comes along and says, are you the priest? Now, I didn't look all holy, looked all dirty, and I said, yes. And he goes, well, I want you to hear my confession. And I said, well, I'll be down at the church at 11. And this was about 20 to 11. That's no big deal. About 20 to 11. I said, yeah, I've advertised I'll be down there at about 11. I've come a long way for this. Right. If you go down there, I'll be down there in less than 5 minutes, clean up and everything like that. And straight away it hit me that the plan that I had in place was disrupted by somebody who had a great need. And I'm not trying to be a hero, not at all, but when people begin sentences to me when they say, look, I know you're busy. You're always busy. I know you're busy. Well, I'm only busy when I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And if it's hearing confessions, that's a priority over playing in the garden, which can be, for me, a real escape. But the priority is always on people and on the person. And that's the first lesson that I would say to priests, and I say to myself, but I would say to you as well, when your plan gets disrupted, if your plan gets disrupted because there's an opportunity for you or me to exercise charity, well, then let it get disrupted. The problem for me is that if my washing routine gets disrupted, I forget that the washing's in the machine, and it won't be until tonight when I go to bed. I think, oh, that's been there all day. So things happen. Well, let it happen. And that's a really big point that I would drive home to all of us at this time who work so hard and too hard, busying ourselves about things that sometimes are really not important. They might be busying ourselves about things to do with our career or our house or how the garden looks or whatever, but it's not usually very busy about acts of charity. So when those opportunities come our way, seize them and let our day be disrupted. The second thing that I would drive home today from this gospel is that Jesus understands that these boys need a chance to recharge. Now, we also need a chance to recharge. We've all got to step back from the busyness of our life and recharge, which means for a family, for example, that we can actually sit down or be together and do something with our family as a family. It's not a task, a chore, that's something that must be done in that working sense. But for families, just to be together is a wonderful thing. It's a way of recharging. It's also a great way for parents to give an example to their children about what is important, because the children will say, my mum and dad are giving us this time just to be together. Nothing else, no agenda, just to be together. It's a great opportunity. And don't let those opportunities go by. But Jesus is also saying here that he instructs the people. So he's instructing the apostles. And primarily, the reason to step back from the busyness and the routine and the plan is to get them to be still, to get them to be quiet, and to get them to hear what God is trying to say in the busyness of their life. And that should ring a few bells with many of you here this evening. We cannot hear God if we're making too much noise or we're moving too fast. Most of us either feel guilty or uncomfortable when we stop our routine, when we're doing nothing. Well, my advice to you is to do nothing, so that something can be heard and something great can happen in your life. Just try and do nothing for once. And the way of doing that is actually through prayer. And this is the big part of this gospel. Jesus doesn't actually mention the word prayer, but when he talks about teaching, I am sure that he is trying to teach his apostles what is most important. And how do we get to what is most important? We get there by prayer. So what do? We firstly remove ourselves from our busyness. He takes them to a quiet place. So he removes them. That's what we do firstly. Stop ourselves and get out of the busy environment. Remember, when it comes to prayer, that you're not alone. We don't say, for example, my Father who art in heaven. We say, our Father. So in your prayer, there is you and God, and there are you and the people who are in your life, or those that are affecting your life at this moment. Prayer is not a solo act. It may seem that way at times, but always remember, somebody guided you to this point in your life, and somebody sustained you in this point in your life, and God wants both for you. The best thing that I can offer you in terms of prayer and recharging your battery is, when it comes to prayer, I'll use this analogy because I can, that quite often if you've ever been in a canoe or a ship and you're coming into a port or a wharf, you quite often would throw a rope to go around a cleat or throw it to another person, and then you would pull yourself in. That's called a line. So you throw the line in and then you would pull yourself in. A lot of people treat prayer like they throw the line in and then try to pull God to them. No, it's the other way around. Throw the line in and let God pull you, which is what happens in prayer. God pulls you to him. Completely the opposite to what most of us spend our time and energy doing. Let God pull us or be pulled towards him. Remembering that our prayer is not a remedy, it's actually a relationship. Very important to remember that as well. Not a remedy for things gone wrong in our life or going wrong. It's a relationship that we are invited or pulled into, and God sustains us in that if we let him. We've all got free will. Sometimes we over-exercise it. Sometimes we don't exercise it enough. Other people think of prayer in terms of, leave it to the professionals. The professionals would probably be people like priests or religious, holy people. Some priests or religious might be holy people as well. But I think that's a real fallacy. Prayer doesn't belong to the priests and religious. It does not at all. The best prayer, I think, actually comes not from the professionals, but the opposite to professionals, which is amateurs. And the word amateur comes from the Latin word to love, amare, to love. And if you think that you're an amateur at prayer, well, then you're probably much closer in your relationship to God than you realise. Not the professionals. Anybody can read a book, get the DVD. The amateurs keep themselves drawn into or being drawn into the relationship with God. And there's only one rule that I'd leave you this evening with in terms of prayer, when it comes to prayer. Firstly, that rule would be show up for prayer. The second part of that is show up often.